I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, we're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. We're live on YouTube and both back in studio, at least for one day here, Sam.
One day.
Like ships passing in the night.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you've used that before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've cautioned you against it before.
Because oh, yeah, we don't do that.
As a euphemistic term.
Oh, stop it. Yeah, yeah. Forgot. I was supposed to not do that. Well, yeah. Happy 4th of July week for everybody.
Yeah.
Including you as an American.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Not yet. When am I due? I'm due for citizenship at some point.
You would think.
Like a year or two. It's coming up.
Surprised they haven't booted you yet.
There's still time.
I feel like I've mentioned that before.
I think I can only commit, you know, certain crimes under a green card before you get invalidated and turfed out of the country. So yeah. I'm still like on probation.
Gotcha. Yeah, they gotta solidify this thing. Yeah. But yeah, I'll be hitting the road here soon. You just got back.
Yeah.
From your little
road trip to Florida.
Yeah.
Bad idea. A lot of driving. It's too far.
Yeah, I'm about to do that.
It's a 2-hour plane ride. Just get the plane.
Yeah, I can't do that with four. I don't even have the option.
With four kids.
Yeah.
Can't get them in a plane. Too many.
It's just so much money.
Expensive.
And then you have to rent a car.
Yeah, but like
on the other end.
I guess it depends. So if you do it in like one shot, as you do, right? You just drive for like a day.
We're debating breaking it up. We might leave today.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. Like we stayed one night over on the way down, and then on the way back, we're like, yeah, let's see some places. Let's drive to Charleston, and then, you know, like somewhere in the Great Smoky Mountains or whatever. And it's like the more stops you do, like the more it becomes really expensive and isn't any cheaper than just doing whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah. These are when you're in your 40s, Sam, these are the things you're dealing with. Today, though, we're going to talk head coaches and then coordinators. We're going to talk about the very best in the NFL. We've got a couple rankings articles on the website that we'll reference, and just go through our rankings as well.
Mm-hmm.
But first, a little throwback. The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. One more housekeeping item. We mentioned a couple weeks ago, I performed some rugby tasks, some drills.
Yep.
And that video will be ready this week. A full video of my rugby exploits.
Yeah. I was reasonably impressed. I was like reasonably impressed by your, well, that's not true. Reasonably impressed by your success rate of the skills. And
like you hitting a baseball and throwing 60 when the expectations are so low.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You cleared my extremely low expectations.
Yeah.
But it was also tempered with just an absolute misery at my own just inability to function athletically or physically anymore.
I haven't seen the video yet. I hope that when we went one-on-one at the end there.
I would assume those are in there, yeah.
That's the highlight.
Yeah.
There's potentially gifts in there.
Yeah, years ago, I hadn't done anything sport-wise for a long time, and I had lost all speed, athleticism, movement skills, just everything. It was just like a couch potato. And went back home, started playing tag rugby with a bunch of friends, you know, flag football, essentially. And allowed a guy who I know is not fast to like get the ball. We're both on the wing, and he ran all the way around the outside of me and scored in the corner. I'm like, what the hell? Like, that cannot ever happen again. That's disgraceful how unfit, unathletic, and unfast I am. I know that I should be twice as fast as that guy. So I had to start playing sport again just to get back to being like a respectable level of speed and athleticism. Like, that started me back on the path to doing sport. Now I'm back where that was again, like so disgusted by my own body's inability to move that I'm like, I need to start playing sport again. Any sport doesn't matter.
But even if you do, you're old, so I don't know what you got left, to be honest.
I mean, there's a lot more in the tank than currently exists.
Okay, before we get started, though, I also got a text message from somebody from like 10 years ago. He's like, oh, we got this 38 and over baseball league. Love to have you come down. I was like, first off, I moved to Cincinnati.
Okay.
The guy from Massachusetts here. I was like, secondly, I've pitched off a mound about 5 times in the last 10 years. I don't think I'm much of an asset anymore.
No.
Despite my past.
Well, I mean, you don't know where everyone else is. If everyone else is in the same place you are, maybe that's just where you all are.
Maybe 71 with movement plays at the 38 and over.
That's what I'm saying.
38 and over.
I mean, you gas it up to 75.
Done. They're all done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into this. Our guy Trevor, down on over at PFF.com, ranked the top 10 head coaches entering 2023. So again, we'll go through his list and just kind of see where we agree and disagree. How difficult is it to rank head coaches, knowing how much the quarterback drives things? How would you go about doing this and trying to separate the quarterback from head coach success?
Yeah, on the one hand, it's kind of easy because the guys that are good tend to win. But Bill Belichick is a classic example of how hard it can be. And right now, there is a legacy-defining conversation going on with Bill Belichick because Tom Brady leaves, and right at that point, Belichick stops being a genius, right? It's like he's masterminded this dynasty, this unstoppable juggernaut of the Patriots for, you know, decades now, and then Brady leaves, and it falls apart, and he's not even able to compete with the best teams in the conference, in the division, hell. And until he gets that back on track, it's like, was Bill Belichick really that great, or did he simply have the greatest quarterback of all time for like a 20-year period, which propped everything up, right?
We could spend an hour breaking this down, but Bill Belichick also deserves credit for discovering Tom Brady, initially putting him into the lineup in a crazy move at the time, right? It's like, here's this guy that was fourth string as a rookie. First off, you kept him on the roster as fourth string. He was a backup to Drew Bledsoe. You had just paid Drew Bledsoe big money. You know, picture a guy that's thought of as a top 8 to 10 quarterback in the NFL right now getting benched for a no-name in the right move by a head coach. Bill Belichick made that move, and he fostered the environment for Brady to develop and become the greatest. But then if you just look at wins and losses with and without Tom Brady, it's like Bill Belichick looks like middling head coach versus GOAT,
and then
right? There's a huge difference there.
That becomes another question, which is like, how much should one decision, whether or not you think it's a sort of a merit-based decision or whether he simply got lucky, like how much should one decision like that determine a guy's greatness versus like week in, week out, you know, are you winning games? Are you skiing? Like all that kind of, all the other stuff.
I think it depends on what you're
coaching.
Sorry. So crazy wrestling fans out there, I liken this to Eric Bischoff's NWO decision.
Of course you do.
Right? Of course, Eric Bischoff had one big, great idea that made his career. It doesn't diminish the rest of his career, but the NWO was one of the coolest things to ever hit wrestling and was, you know, changed the landscape of professional wrestling. That was Bill Belichick, you know, picking Tom Brady. Now, here's where I think you have to separate those two things. If you're saying we're going into 2023, who are the best head coaches that we feel best about having success right now, I think it's okay to say Belichick isn't some, like Belichick doesn't have to sit atop the list, right? He doesn't have to sit, because now he has Mac Jones. And Bill Belichick with Mac Jones is going to be different than Bill Belichick with Tom Brady. Give Belichick credit. He's still a very good defensive coach. He's still a very good head coach. But is he the best? And so here's where Trevor went. He went Andy Reid number one, Bill Belichick number two. We've seen other lists through the years from, let's say the nerdier folks in the NFL community.
The nerds.
The ones who just use numbers. And I think they miss on Belichick because they only quantify what they see. Fourth down decisions and, you know, like things that are, I think, to me that are on the periphery. They're important. They add win probability. They're easiest to discuss. But the head coach is not just what you see on Sunday. It's really CEO for 365 days a year. So I think in that sense, Bill Belichick running the entire program is very good. He's not great maybe at the in-game decision stuff that we can quantify a lot easier. All said, still think he's one of the best head coaches in the NFL. And I'll also say, when we're ranking the coaches, I think it's easier to put a guy like Andy Reid up there or say a Mike Tomlin now that you've seen him without Ben Roethlisberger, or a Kyle Shanahan, or a John Harbaugh, guys who have won with multiple quarterbacks. I think it's easier to say we've seen it from those guys in multiple situations, therefore they get extra credit. So Andy Reid at number one on this list, do you agree that he should be ranked as the best head coach going into 2023? This isn't a resume deal. Like, Belichick's resume is still the best.
Yeah.
But best coach going into this year.
I think so, just because – so as much as we're hand-wringing over how hard it is because the quarterback is a confounding factor and influences everything, right? Andy Reid has the quarterback. He has Patrick Mahomes. So it just makes it easy. Like, he's got that bit there. It's a constant. We know Mahomes is great. So now you can just give Andy Reid credit for everything. And he's done it, you know, throughout a variety of different offensive coordinators. They cycled through a few of those guys during his time in Kansas City. He's done it in Philadelphia and in Kansas City, where, you know, Philadelphia, he didn't have Patrick Mahomes. Sure, he had some good quarterbacks, but never had a Mahomes. So I think, and you know, the as much as it's not like a lifetime achievement award, but I think those pieces of his resume are relevant to what's happening right now. He's always been, you know, running a very good offense. He's put good defensive coordinators in place. I think you have to give him credit and say, in this world where you're right, like, terming head coach a CEO is probably a good way of looking at it. Like, CEO, as much as anything else, like, their role is to set just a broad direction and a culture. Like, those are your two jobs, effectively, right? Point the business in the correct direction, generally, right? Find north and start moving in that direction. Point the ship there and set sail. And make sure everybody doesn't hate their existence while you're doing it, right? Make sure that people are not killing each other on the boat and turfing everybody overboard in the middle of the ocean. Like, those are your two gigs as a CEO. And I think the head coach is the same thing. Generally, point the franchise in the right direction and make sure everybody doesn't hate their existence Monday to Sunday. That's it. Do those two things, do them well, and you're a good head coach.
It's a good cover letter you got there. I will, as head coach.
Make sure everybody doesn't hate themselves.
Yeah.
The end.
It's interesting. Scott Pioli was on Good Morning Football recently and answering the question, would you rather win one Super Bowl and be bad for the next 10 years versus just being competitive for 10 years and having a shot but not being guaranteed a championship? And he went with the competitiveness. It was an interesting angle because he went with, it's not just about the championship and the parade. As a leader, literally everybody's job is on the line because of you, whether it's people on the roster, whether it's front office personnel, whatever it might be. So we talk a lot of times about, hey, you got to go for it. You got to go for this big championship. But a lot of personnel don't necessarily adhere to that. With Andy Reid, with or without Patrick Mahomes, he's been competitive.
Yep.
Right? And I think the multiple quarterbacks that he's worked with, right? It's Donovan McNabb or Alex Smith or getting the best year out of Michael Vick. Right? Like, don't forget, Michael Vick went from, I don't want to use the word underachiever, but he was supposed to, like, transform the NFL. He showed elements of an Atlanta. Obviously, he went to jail for a couple of years. And then he comes back. And we didn't see peak Michael Vick until 2010, 9 or 10 years into his career, when Andy Reid was his head coach in Philadelphia. So he's gotten the most out of all those guys. The year before Patrick Mahomes shows up, Alex Smith is the most efficient deep ball thrower in the NFL because, you know, they crafted an offense and find Tyreek Hill and all that. So, yeah, I think Andy Reid going forward makes sense. Even being, you know, tied to Patrick Mahomes, they're going to work together there.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Belichick is number two on Trevor's list. I think those are all fair. 3, 4, and 5. Mike Tomlin, Kyle Shanahan, yeah. John Harbaugh.
The Belichick thing, I think, is the most difficult one because it's not just – so on the one hand, he's basically 500 since Brady left, which is not bad. Like, it's, you know, that's a respectable achievement. It's also the kind of area where – you know, Jeff Fisher was pilloried for never doing any better than 500. It's like, if you're a 500 coach, that's not good enough. We're getting rid of you. And where I think Belichick really runs into trouble in a post-Brady world is he's always been an abrasive, unconventional coach, which when everything's working is great. It's the Patriot way. It's all that kind of stuff, right? And you get on board, you get out of the way. And then when you're not really winning, now it's like, is this actually problematic? Like, is this an issue that your weird way of doing things is actually no longer working? So, you know, let's not have an offensive coordinator. Let's get a special teams guy and a defensive guy, and we'll put them together, and combined, they will be the offensive mastermind for this offense, which was, I mean, that's one of the worst coaching decisions in the last X number of years, just across the board. It was an absolute unmitigated disaster, to the point where your young quarterback reportedly is going outside of the building, like calling up people being like, dude, is this, like, this doesn't feel right. How, you know, how should we be doing this? Which obviously pissed Belichick off and blah, blah, blah. But like, that's a disaster of a sort of, from your CEO, like, point the thing in the right direction. That pointed it way off to the left.
That's fair. And so here's the deal too. If you were a Belichick detractor and you were to try to say, hey, maybe he was overrated. Were there decisions? And it's also, by the way, difficult to separate. Belichick's the GM as well, right? He has final say on personnel. Yeah. So you're separating personnel. Like, there were definitely personnel missteps, right? I mean, Belichick, anybody who's on the top of the mountain, people take shots at them or whatever. There were points where Belichick's a bad drafter. If you nitpick everybody, you're going to find stuff. If you want to nitpick Andy Reid and his clock management through the years, you can nitpick that stuff. Bill Belichick, did he get away with those types of decisions? Maybe not an egregious Matt Patricia, but did he get away with some of those decisions throughout the years? Letting Wes Welker walk, you know, there were years where they just let the receiving core become one of the worst in the NFL, and it affected them. They go to the AFC Championship, but they had no chance of winning the Super Bowl compared to other years. If you were nitpicking, you could say, yeah, there were some bad decisions that probably didn't show up because you had Brady and at least this other nucleus to at least make the AFC Championship. So that does make it difficult, I think, when you're ranking Belichick going forward, which is different than saying, like, here's this dude's Hall of Fame resume. And if you combine that with some of the in-game decisions and things that, you know, is Belichick going to be, is he forward-thinking enough to kind of keep up with where the league's going? I think those are fair questions at this point. The one other thing, too, like, you know, you say, you know, don't judge a quarterback by wins and don't judge pitchers by wins. Like, should you judge head coaches straight up by wins and losses? Mostly yes, but of course there's the factor of the quarterback's going to drive it a little bit more than them.
Yeah, I think generally yes, but we need to have the understanding of whether he had any shot of achieving that with what he was given. Like, particularly, okay, if Belichick is slightly different because, you know, if he's the head coach and the GM, then he's nobody to blame but himself. But there's definitely times where, you know, like Vic Fangio, the head coach, right? How harsh can you be on Vic Fangio, the head coach, when you consider what John Elway did in terms of quarterback strategy and just never got him the guy, right? Yeah. Vic Fangio carries the can for that. It's like, did he fail as a head coach? No. Like, he never had a shot. Nobody would have won. I mean, even Mike Tomlin in this, like, never, man's never had a losing season. Sure. I feel like no head coach in the NFL would have had serious success given the consistent swings and misses at the most important position. So I think generally it's fine to judge head coaches by wins and losses. But you have to sort of factor in if their GM, if whoever their personnel guy was, simply never gave them the capacity to win with the players he gave them.
All right, so on Trevor's list, Mike Tomlin's 3, Kyle Shanahan 4, John Harbaugh 5. I think if I was making this list, I think going into 23, I would drop Belichick here for some of the reasons that we said. Not to say anything about his past, right? First ballot Hall of Famer, you could still call him the GOAT head coach. But if we're saying, who do I want to run my team in 2023, I don't know if I'm too biased towards the offensive guys. I think I'd go Andy Reid and maybe Kyle Shanahan, number 2. And then John Harbaugh, not an offensive guy necessarily, but a guy that has had consistent success and has shown the ability to win in different ways. I think I'd go Harbaugh in the top 3 here. What do you think of this top 5? And then Sean McVay's number 6. I'm torn on McVay.
Yeah.
I'm back and forth on McVay. I think he's done a lot of good things through the years. What are your thoughts on this top 5 or 6 here?
I think they're the right names. Certainly 3, 4, 5. I'm not sure how much we boost Mike Tomlin because of that sort of weird statistical quirk of never having had a losing season, right? Which is really impressive. Like, it's a hell of an achievement. But it's also, like, it's just an arbitrary number, you know, and he's been one above it. Or, like, you know, it's like...
They've been to a handful of AFC championships in the last 10 years.
That's the more impressive part.
Like, yeah, they've been good.
But, like, you know, Jeff Fisher is a few games away from, you know, having that kind of streak of just perpetual 500. It's like that we've already discussed. Simply being 500 constantly is not an achievement. So just simply always staying slightly above that line, it's like, whatever. I think Tomlin...
Tomlin's also always had Ben Roethlisberger until we saw aging Roethlisberger and then rookie Kenny Pickett. I think that might be propping up Tomlin as much as anything. We saw Ben Roethlisberger barely be able to throw the ball beyond 10 yards and still not have a losing season. And Kenny Pickett as a rookie and still not... I feel like that props Tomlin up as much as anything.
I just think generally the sort of takeaway is Tomlin is always competitive, like what you said about Andy Reid.
Yeah.
I think we probably overrate it slightly just because it ends up being this notable benchmark of he's never been below 500. Like, to me, the difference between that and he's had essentially the same career, but he dipped below 500 once, it's irrelevant. Like, there's just no difference there. Like, if you swap one win in a season, you know, or one from the 500 season and put it somewhere else, you know, probably given the same win-loss record over the last X number of years, it's no different, but we think about it differently if it takes the record away. I think that's probably a mistake. But generally, I think that perpetual competitiveness that you talked about with Andy Reid is the point with Mike Tomlin. And, you know, our two-pronged idea of you set the franchise in the right direction and you make sure everybody doesn't hate their existence. Like, he clearly sets a culture in Pittsburgh that works. Like, people want to play for him. And I think one of the other things that probably does define Mike Tomlin quite well is he has an incredible track record of keeping loose cannons firing in the right direction for an insane period of time. Like, I mean, Antonio Brown is obviously the most clear example, but Brown stayed there for however many years he was in Pittsburgh, leaves the building and is almost immediately out of the league, bouncing through multiple teams as an absolute, like, burning wreckage on his way out the door. Mike Wallace was a pain in the ass for a period of time in Pittsburgh, but Tomlin held together and then leaves Pittsburgh and the thing unspools quickly. Like, he is able to keep these guys in line and working for him for a length of time that feels dramatically disproportionate to anybody else. And I think that's not a coincidence. That is the culture that he's able to set within the building.
That's one of those huge things, like I'm saying, we don't really know that. Like, we didn't know that about Antonio Brown until he left, right? So that's where I don't know, just consistent success
probably
sums that up.
Right. It's difficult to parse from the outside, but when you start going, you know, when you go to training camps and you see how things work, you can kind of see bits and pieces of that from the way things work in Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? It's always difficult to know, is it causation or correlation? Are you putting a pattern together that doesn't really exist, or is that actually something that's going on? But you can see the way they operate training camp. Like, they do things differently from other teams, and I think that's all part of Mike Tomlin, you know, creating this different culture in Pittsburgh that exists almost anywhere else.
I think when I'm looking at these head coaches, I'm looking for something where I picture, if I was a GM, how are they making my life easier? And so the reason why I put Kyle Shanahan at 2 is I think he just gives leeway to the front office, to your personnel department. Because we're going to talk about all these other – we're debating, will Bill Belichick ever even win a playoff game without Tom Brady? Right. Can he even win a playoff game with Mac Jones? Where I feel like if all the rumors before the draft were true and Kyle Shanahan and the Niners just drafted Mac Jones and he's played the last 3 years – they're in the NFC Championship the way they were these last couple of years. So I think Kyle Shanahan Kyle Shanahan's secret weapon is creating offense despite the quarterback historically. And then when you do get him the right quarterback, you should be in the Super Bowl or, you know, knocking down the door for a championship.
Well, so you have – and Kyle Shanahan is probably in the Andy Reid spectrum of these head coaches. But you have these guys – you know, if you're thinking about it in a CEO terms, you've got the broad direction thing, you've got the culture thing, but you probably have a third dimension, which is have you got such a sort of a system, a scheme?
Schematic advantage.
Yeah. Like, have you got a system that is just better than everybody else, right? And are you, if you're that type of coach, and I think that's where Shanahan fits in, you don't necessarily need to have the greatest culture in the world, or, you know, the direction, I guess, is a slightly nebulous term, but like Andy Reid feels like he's had an offensive system that's worked for, you know, decades, and that's been the driving force of his success, and everything else follows off that. Kyle Shanahan feels like he's in that bucket, where the biggest thing he's bringing to the table is his offense, which just dominates and has been consistently able to dominate and keep coming back and evolve, and that's a big thing as well. So if you're going to be that guy, the biggest strength you can bring to the table is that evolution. Make sure that you don't get found out, right? And be able to keep having the remain at the cutting edge of your schematic advantage. And that, I think, is Kyle Shanahan's true superpower. Is he's been doing this, like Matt Ryan's MVP season was 2016, right? Yep. So we're talking, yeah, like 7 years of this system not being figured out, to the point where last year it was at its best with Mr. Irrelevant running it. Like, that's how good this system is right now. So that is what makes Kyle Shanahan great, is he's just bringing a better system to the table than anybody else right now.
I want to get into the meaning of these rankings in a second, but first, the player you benched in fantasy football just went off. But with Best Ball on DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. There's no bench. This year, Best Ball on DraftKings is bigger and better than ever, with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. Join DraftKings' biggest Best Ball contest today and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Enter DraftKings' Best Ball Millionaire Contest and lose your spot in the document. What are you going to get with the Best Ball Millionaire Contest? You can snake draft your team for the entire season. I clicked by accident, Sam. Mm. It was a mistake. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, no drops, or trades. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with code PFF. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars. That's code PFF only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is $10. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Ends July 14th, 2023.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We've had shows about this before, Sam, where it's like, all right, how many quarterbacks, if you got to draft quarterbacks and head coaches, when do the head coaches start?
Right.
We agree, okay, the quarterback's more important. And I think you and I both came to the conclusion top 8 to 10 quarterbacks first, and then maybe the head coach, or maybe the Andy Reid's and Kyle Shanahan slip in there at some point. Because if you have Andy Reid or Kyle Shanahan, you could probably have QB 20 and have success. And there's not many guys on this list where you could say that.
Yeah.
And so, we lean offense, too, because, again, I think defense is just a little bit harder to predict year over year. So if you ensure that you're going to have a good offensive team, then you're kind of playing the odds with your defense that when you run into that year where you have a good defense, you have a championship opportunity.
I think we've probably also just reached the point in the NFL right now, whether it's the cycle or not, where – You can't have a defensive system that is consistently like better than everybody else. You can't have, there's no equivalent to Kyle Shanahan's offense on defense. You could argue, you know, Vic Fangio, but we've already talked about how that didn't work in Denver because they never got him a quarterback. But like Brandon Staley was the Vic Fangio disciple. He was going to bring his system, and like the Chargers defense hasn't been any better under him at all. So I think that's part of the problem with why, like, that's why we're leaning offensive minds when you start talking about these head coaches, because you can bring a Kyle Shanahan over and that system will stay there dominant for, you know, a decade. Now, what the Shanahan success does is highlight Sean McVay, because theoretically, very similar, right? An offensive system that when it was at its best best in the NFL, better than everybody else, dominant, absolute juggernaut. But unlike Shanahan, McVay's system hit a sticky patch and hasn't come out the other side of it, or at least hasn't got itself back on track. Now, it's difficult to figure out how much of that is the system has been worked out a little bit and he hasn't been able to counter that fully, and how much of it is they've run into, you know, personnel problems, right? They just haven't had the ability to have the system firing as much. But I think you can look at the two different coaches and say one has done a much better job of continually evolving his system so that it remains at the cutting edge versus McVay, who has hit some rocks when it comes to his.
Yeah, I don't know if saying like sticky patch is the way to do it. It's just less consistent over the years, right? It got worse with Jared Goff at the helm. They made a nice move to go get Matthew Stafford and won a Super Bowl with him and built the system around Stafford. I mean, I think McVay deserves a lot of credit for getting to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff in year three of his career and also winning the Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, of course. I throw last year out, I think, for the Rams as far as how bad they were. But even like in between those in-between Goff years, I don't think we were ever looking at McVay be like, man, this league, you know, league can't figure him out. With Shanahan, there's more consistent success. What I do love about McVay, though, as an offensive head coach, he's definitely an above-average offensive coach, right? He's done a nice job of cycling through defensive coordinators, and we go back to the CEO thing, throwing the defense to someone who's good at running it. And he's it with different types of personnel, with Wade Phillips, who'd been around the league forever, with Brandon Staley, who developed under Vic Fangio, but you know they developed Brandon Staley and you know sent him off to be a head coach. They brought back Raheem Morris, who was a former head coach who'd been around the league a little bit and allowed him to evolve that defense. I think McVay's done a really nice job in that sense of developing coaches and handling attrition. That's the other part of this. This is why the wins and losses thing might be one of the best indicators, right? It's the head coach. That's their job. When Kyle Shanahan's cycling through defensive coordinators and McVay's cycling through coordinators, and Shanahan's losing all of his offensive assistants, if you can sustain that success despite losing not just players but coaching personnel, that has staying power. So that's where I think McVay deserves credit, because for the most part, the Rams have been extremely competitive until they ran into last year, and McVay deserves credit for that. He's at 6 on Trevor's list. Do you want to talk John Harbaugh? Really quick?
Yeah, Harbaugh. So Harbaugh, Tomlin, and I think you probably throw Mike Vrabel onto that list, though he isn't in Trevor's top 10.
He's not in Trevor's top 10. That was the one guy I was going to say. People who watch the show know we love Vrabel. I would put him in the top 10.
Those three guys feel like they're in the same cluster to me in terms of they've made some bold decisions. They've consistently been able to get kind of the most out of the talent around them. They're almost always competitive. Like, they're just consistently good across the board. Harbaugh, I think, deserves some credit for, you know, we talk about how much should single decisions kind of influence legacy and that kind of thing. Like, it shouldn't, I don't think, be understated what a big call it is to go with a guy. So you got Joe Flacco as your quarterback, right? And then you go and draft Lamar Jackson. And so, number one, you decide to draft Lamar Jackson. Now, I've said before, I don't think you give them too much credit for that, because it's not like, you know, everyone's like, oh, everyone passed on Lamar Jackson except the Ravens. The Ravens also passed on Lamar Jackson. They drafted
for a 25-year-old pitcher,
Hayden Hurst, a disaster of a tight end in the first round before Lamar Jackson. So let's tap the brakes on giving them too much credit for that. But they did draft Lamar Jackson as a quarterback, and then were prepared to build around him and create this custom tailored offense, you know, in the basement, whether or not that's apocryphal or, you know, and that was their plan going forward. Like, that is not an easy move to make at the most important position in the game. That takes a lot of guts from the head coach to give the offensive coordinator, to give Greg Roman the autonomy to do that and say, I trust you to go away and build something that doesn't exist right now and is completely departed from anything we're running otherwise. Go make it happen. Like, I have faith in you to do that. and then we'll reap the benefits of that once it comes. He deserves a lot of credit for having the guts to run that kind of game plan as a succession plan to Joe Flacco, and for it to work, and you know, to have the success they've had.
Those are the things where I lean into what Harbaugh has done, right? As much as we could say, well, Belichick's success with Brady is in the past, therefore let's look to the future. The Harbaugh thing is different because what we've seen from the past, I think, is going to help dictate what we'll see in the future. What we've seen in the past is the year that they won with Flacco, they made an offensive coordinator change halfway through the season that helped dictate things. The Lamar Jackson thing, building around his skill set. The way John Harbaugh has become one of the best coaches as far as in-game management and being aggressive at the right times. And even though it doesn't always work, I think his process is sound. Those are all the things that make me have confidence in John Harbaugh going forward. No matter which personnel you give him, he'll maximize them. Yeah. That's what I always come back to with guys like Mike Vrabel and with Mike Tomlin. As you mentioned, that bucket of guys, I think they're going to maximize what they have.
And I think that is a different decision to, you know, let's just start Tom Brady over Drew Bledsoe. Like, there's a strategic level of thinking, of thought, to that move. Let's draft Lamar Jackson. Let's build an offense around him. Let's do something different because we're never, like, that's a strategic level of thought that's different to the tactical decision to just make a personnel switch. Like, let's just change this guy. That'll win the next game more. And, oh, look, it's the right decision. Let's keep going. I think you give him credit. You give him more credit for that call than you do for a guy simply making it like that versus do we go with Brock Purdy or not, right? Like, that's a tactical decision that is going to work out strategically for you in the long term or not, but it's an easier call than let's plot out what this looks like long term.
All right, the rest of Trevor's list here. Number 7, Doug Peterson of the Jags. Number 8, Nick Sirianni of the Philadelphia Eagles. Number 9, Sean McDermott from the Bills. And then number 10, Brian Daboll from the New York Giants. 1 year and onto Trevor's list. Doug Peterson at 7 is interesting. He's got a Super Bowl under his belt. He won a Super Bowl with Carson Wentz. And, well, Carson Wentz as the starter, and then Nick Foles, of course, taking over. Because I was thinking about Doug Peterson as we were prepping for the show here. How much, and again, going back to the Belichick thing, we focus so much on what guys do with and without elite quarterbacks. Does one Doug Peterson season, where knowing what we know about Carson Wentz now, Wentz's second year in the league, you have him as an MVP candidate. He goes down, and then Nick Foles takes over and goes on the Super Bowl run. Doug Peterson hasn't been able to replicate that level of success since then. You could say since then he looks just like Belichick does without Brady, which is a fringe playoff team and, you know, some ups and downs. So is it really, if you don't have an elite quarterback, show me you can do it once like Doug Peterson did. Show me you can go win a championship. Now, there are other factors there, too. The Eagles roster was fantastic in 2017. But I think Doug Peterson overall has done a really nice job of, again, maximizing what he has.
Yeah, so Peterson is a fascinating example of, I think the reason that the Mike Tomlin record, if you want to call it that, is important is because when you have those crappy seasons, that's what gets you fired. So you look at Peterson's record, and it's 7-9, 13-3, won a Super Bowl, 9-7, 9-7, and then boom, we hit 4-11-1, and the 4-11-1 gets you fired, and didn't even matter that you won the Super Bowl, you're gone. Like, that's such a bad season, can't have it. So you're out of the door, right? But like, so you've got one season where they put it all together, won the Super Bowl, and then 3 years of what we talked about before, this like 500 level, which is fine, but not good enough, right? And if you can stick at that kind of level of like generally competitive, you're good. Because it's very difficult to fire a guy that's at that kind of level permanently, right? You have to really want to do it. You have to reach this level of like Mike Shanahan in Denver, where the frustration just gets too much eventually, and you go, all right, that's enough, done. We need better than 500. Can't have it. It's too much. You need to be better than this. But it takes a long time to get to that point. I mean, look at Dallas, for God's sake. Like, they're usually slightly better than that, but it's very, you give a guy an awful lot of rope when he's perpetually able to get to that kind of level. But 1 year of 4-11-1, you're like, all right, see ya. Doesn't even matter that you've got a Super Bowl ring already. Like, that's enough.
And it was probably the right move, getting Nick Sirianni in there for the Eagles, which is crazy, too.
It looks good in hindsight now because of everything they've done.
On this list.
But like, and you know, let's remember that that year was the Travis Fulgham year at receiver, like the one random month of insane.
Oh, whole line, like, the Eagles have had a great offensive line every year except that year.
Yeah.
The receiving core fell apart.
So there's reasons for it. And you can look at that and say, you know, was that harsh on Doug Peterson? Like, should he have actually been given the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, you've already got a championship. No other year has been bad. This is just a bad year. Let's just move on. Let's come back together. And then, like kind of Kurt Warner, you give him a lot of credit for like the second chapter of his career, right? Coming back and doing it again.
Yeah.
So Peterson coming back last year and resuscitating this Jags team and looking like he's getting the best out. Like next year, I think is going to be big for Doug Peterson's legacy, because last year, I think it's very difficult to separate what he did versus Urban Meyer. And it's like simply not being Urban Meyer is a huge part of your achievement this year. Like,
yeah.
And literally anybody in the world could have done that. You are not Urban Meyer. I am not Urban Meyer. So either one of us is halfway towards being whatever the hell Doug Peterson did last year. But figuring out where that is next year, right? How much are you actually able to do in addition to not being Urban Meyer? That is, I think, the question, the open question for Doug Peterson. So give him credit for what he did in Philadelphia. Like, he has a Super Bowl ring. There aren't too many guys that have done that. That's an achievement. It's a laudable one. But figuring out exactly where he ranks in terms of being a head coach is, I think, contingent on what happens next year and the year after that, and what he can actually build with this Jacksonville team.
See what he does as a front runner here. I love my wife very much.
Huh.
However, one of the biggest red flags in our relationship through the years was her purchase of the Urban Meyer book on leadership.
Yeah.
Just saying. Tyler liked that one.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, over the last 10 years, of all the gifts I've gotten, wife does a pretty good job.
She got it as a gift for you.
Yeah, as a gift.
It was like, here's some things to
you. It's kind of a throw-in. I don't know what to get you for Christmas. Here's a book on leadership by Urban Meyer.
Here's some things you can learn from.
Yeah. And
what's in that? I've seen it. I've never looked at it.
So I used to have it, if you see my home setup, I used to have it up on my shelf until his Jacksonville disaster is in my background on the shelf. I tore it down. I'm like, that's not hanging up.
Keep it up. It's like an ironic thing now.
I should have it facing, right? Like Urban Meyer. Like, actually funny. Yeah.
You see those sort of setups everybody has with the shelves behind them, and there's all the, and then there's always one that's featured.
That's a good point. I'm going to make it front and center.
Yeah, make sure you feature the most ridiculous books you have.
But I skimmed it. I never read it. I skimmed the titles after he got, 3 weeks into the Jacksonville tenure, and it's hilarious.
Kick your problems into the future.
It should be called Do As I Say, Not As I Do. That should be the title. You didn't know where I was going with that one.
No.
But, Doug Peterson does ton of credit, as we've given him, for turning around the Urban Meyer thing. Like, he went in, speaking of low expectations, no expectations for the Jags. Gets them to the playoffs. They win a playoff game. You're right, though. If Doug Peterson, if he gets the Jags to be competing with the Bengals and the Chiefs and Bills, now we're talking.
He's capable. Even if he doesn't do that, if he's able to make that franchise a sort of consistent division winner playoff team in the next few years, like if they just become the sort of front runner in the AFC South for the next few years, that, I think, does wonders for his legacy. Like,
for
becoming that, if he does a version of the Harbaugh, Tomlin, very like consistent contending from a Jags team that had been bad for most of the last period of time, like 2017 obviously happened, but like outside of that, that has generally not been a good team. If he's able to turn them into a sort of consistent contender, or even if they don't ever get to the level of like really threatening Kansas City, Buffalo, Cincinnati, et cetera, that I think does a huge thing for his legacy.
And he has the chance to foster this environment where Trevor Lawrence is an MVP candidate year in, year out.
Right.
And that puts them in that boat. So he's Doug Peterson is set up for that success as well, given not just all the personnel, but like the one guy that he has. Nick Sirianni at 8 and Sean McDermott at 9. It's interesting some of the names that didn't make the list here for Trevor, but Sirianni making all the right moves last year for the Eagles. We talk about the innovation part. How much does he deserve credit for just, the way they run their QB sneaks and maximize Jalen Hurts? But I thought there was a lot of good with what Sirianni has done in Philadelphia. Just across the board, it feels like they're maximizing their advantages.
Yeah, so jump into McDermott for a second, I think McDermott is getting himself into that Tomlin, you know, Harbaugh conversation of just consistent, high expectation, high achievement, consistent competitiveness, just always good. The CEO thing seems to set a very good culture in that building, you know, has things working in the right direction, just needs the validation, really, of getting that ring, right? You're always competitive, but Kansas City is now in your way. And, you know, this has happened before to teams where, you know, you're incredibly good, but the 49ers are in your way for like the next decade, right? And getting a ring is not easy because there's a better team out there. And that's basically where Buffalo have been for the last few years. They've been knocking on the door, but they haven't been able to get one. But I think he's in that kind of conversation. I'm not saying they don't deserve to be on there, but I just struggle with like Nick Sirianni and Brian Daboll, because we're talking 1 year of evidence, right? Anything can happen in a year. It can all come together. Philadelphia in particular, like we're consistently talking about how Howie Roseman is like the GM of the world and everything they do turns to gold, like the Midas touch. It's like, how hard is it to just be the head coach at the helm of that?
It's 2 years of Sirianni, but 1 year of elite Eagles.
Yeah.
And yeah, it definitely coincides with Howie and, you know, great personnel moves.
Right.
And I'm okay with Sirianni here. I think Daboll, I wouldn't put him on my list just because it's 1 year. But of all the guys on this list, we sit here and voice our, you know, lack of confidence in the Giants because we read a depth chart. Like that's
I all just I think.
I read their personnel and say this is a 5-win team.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you win 11, right, that's impressive. So Daboll's set himself up potentially for being on this list forever if he can keep that going.
Yeah, I just think for head coaches, you need a body of evidence so that you can start to parse out the credit, right? You need a period of time so you can figure out who was the driving force behind this stuff. And we're still trying to work it out with Belichick and Brady and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But for the Eagles, you look at it and you say, okay, in the last few years, they've done an incredible job. They've gone from the 4-11-1 season, they got Doug Peterson fired, and they built back and they got to a Super Bowl, and they did it with a new quarterback. So who gets credit for that? Is it Nick Sirianni for coming in, taking this thing, bumbling his way through the first press conference, having everybody go, uh-oh, that doesn't sound good. And now everybody's saying, oh, this guy is the model of how a new, you know, a head coach works. Is it Shane Steichen, who just got a head coaching job himself off the back of the job he's done as coordinator and developing Jalen Hurts? Is it Jalen Hurts for simply being that dude and developing in a way a lot of people, including myself, didn't think he was capable of, right? A quarterback that was not ready when he came into the league and has just consistently plugged away and overcome every setback and had the mental fortitude to say, I don't care that I make mistakes, I'm going to get better. He embodies that every self-help quote you've ever heard in your life, right? Like, you know, failure is just another mark on the road to success, blah, blah, blah. Like, that dude got benched in the national title game. Like, on the biggest stage that exists in college football, he got sat down correctly for Tua and came back and got himself drafted in the second round and then got himself through a bad rookie year, just got better and better, and now was, you know, had one of the better Super Bowl performances you're going to find, came up a step short. But, like, is he actually the driving force behind Philadelphia's success? Not the coaching at all. Or Howie Roseman and the Midas touch that he's had over the last few years. So you've got four different options right now, and there's potentially more out there. And how, like, if you, the, you know, the classic pie chart, how big are the slices for each one of those guys, right? I don't think we know yet. So I find it very difficult to put Nick Sirianni on the list simply because we have no idea how big his slice of that pie is. We'll have a better idea next year because Steichen isn't there anymore, and that's, you know, one less slice to divvy up, and you get a different perspective of that. But I just think you need a longer body of work for head coaches to try and figure out where the credit deserves or belongs.
That's fair, but I'll say this. I'm buying into Sirianni as the right facilitator for Howie and what they do in Philadelphia. He's a facilitator for what they're going to give him personnel wise, and I think he'll be good at that. So I'd almost move Sirianni up on the list. Here's where I struggle with all these things. Much like with the quarterbacks, you're gonna rank six or seven, and we'll all have the same names, and they might be in a different order. But it's like, all right, go rank 9 through 20. And the most recent year is probably going to – what you saw most recently is going to dictate it a little bit, and you're going to – you know, QB 12, you're going to say, well, he just got this great wide receiving core, and he's got this great offensive line, or he lost his offensive line, and that's why he fell down. That's the rest of the head coaches, right? Because some of the names that missed here, Pete Carroll, Zach Taylor, Mike Vrabel, who we've mentioned, Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera at one point.
Sean Payton.
And so now we have to we get Sean Payton evidence without Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. Good for Sean Payton for developing Drew Brees, and you know, who was already pretty good with the Chargers, but then he became a Hall of Fame quarterback under Sean Payton. Deserves credit for that. We get to see him without Vrabel. If they didn't collapse down the stretch last year, I think Vrabel's in the top five potentially with what he had done with Tennessee's personnel over the last few years. Ron Rivera, I think we've forgotten about him a little bit because he's trotting Taylor Heinicke out there all the time. No offense to Taylor Heinicke, but we've had a couple good games of Heinicke, and then you're dealing with one of the five worst quarterbacks in the NFL.
One of the things I love most about Taylor Heinicke is I think he's acutely aware that he's Taylor Heinicke. Like, you know what I mean? He's
not when he's in the pocket, though.
He really is, though. He's like, Taylor Heinicke is, nobody in the world is more aware of who he is than himself. Like, he's treating this gig that he has right now as like, I won the lottery. I got like a $14 million contract or whatever it was, like off the back of what I just did. This is like party time.
Oh, as far as YOLO.
Yeah. Like he's fully aware of the fact that he is not Tom Brady.
Other names to consider. So I mentioned Vrabel. I mean, Pete Carroll, right? We've got Pete Carroll with no Russell Wilson.
So, like, Vrabel, Carroll, Sean Payton, all three of those guys, to me, deserve a spot on this list ahead of Sirianni and Brian Daboll, simply for, like, body of evidence.
There's also a head coach with a winning percentage over 700 who's not on the list, Matt LaFleur. So, and let me throw another one out there, the guy that he replaced, Mike McCarthy. Mm. So now you've got, is Mike McCarthy actually underrated? Because you and I live on this in this Twitter NFL world, which you know, can be one-sided in takes, and it's like, if you have the opposite like everybody like it was cool to trash Mike McCarthy a few years ago and yeah, he stepped into a Cowboys job with a pretty good situation, but how much credit does Mike McCarthy deserve for a lot of success in Green Bay, winning a Super Bowl and doing a nice job in Dallas overall?
Yeah, I mean, he deserves credit for it.
Then Matt LaFleur got Aaron Rodgers back on track after Rodgers had soured on McCarthy and Rodgers' game had stagnated a little bit. LaFleur extracts back-to-back MVPs out of Aaron Rodgers. And we'll learn, of course, more about Matt LaFleur and see what he could do with Jordan Love this year.
And McCarthy, of course, has a Super Bowl ring. Like, he won one with that Green Bay team. So, yeah, like, McCarthy is interesting because generally he sort of embodies that being good but not great, but he did get there once, which should or usually changes the narrative around a guy. Like, once you get that one, you can be average for quite a long period of time, and now it becomes what we talk about, like sustained success, right? It's a good thing. Whereas if you don't get the ring, and this is where McDermott is running into trouble at the moment, now simply being good for a period of time, it's like, it's fine, but you need, you know, where's the next step? I need the ring. I need the validation. Otherwise, it's good, but it's not enough. Like, McCarthy is interesting because he actually did get there, and he won the Super Bowl. He also had a 15-1 season in there as well. The next one didn't win the Super Bowl, but like, he's had some insane peaks, but is now being remembered for like a period of time where you didn't seem to get the best out of Rodgers, and now another period of time in Dallas where you're just coming up short the way everybody has done in Dallas in the last 25 years. So, yeah, he's a difficult case, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I mean, I think it's tough to get just even the top 15. Do you make a case for Zach Taylor? So as much as we want to separate the coach and the quarterback, and Joe Burrow's been a top three quarterback over the last few years, Zach Taylor, once again, you foster the environment for that. But I think Zach Taylor deserves the most credit for turning the team over to Joe Burrow when he did. And, or, you know, in 2021, forgetting, you know, Joe Mixon needs 29 carries a game, they got away from that really early in the season. And then I also think just the touchy-feely aspect of it. Yeah, the Bengals have laid an egg here and there over the last couple of years, but they always bounce back. Hmm. That's what I mentioned throughout the season when we do our weekly reviews. And they'll have, like last year, terrible game against the Browns on Monday Night Football. The previous year, terrible game against the Jets. Zach Taylor's helped keep that together for whatever that's worth. Maybe it's Burrow. Maybe it's Burrow's swag. Maybe it's just the fact that the Bengals are better or a good team and you just have bad weeks. But Zach Taylor's at the helm there, and they've had a lot of success, two back-to-back AFC championships, including a Super Bowl. Zach Taylor maybe deserves some credit, but it's tough to separate him from Burrow right now.
Yeah, it is. Taylor is an interesting one because I think initially he was in that category of head coaches of, you know, the Shanahan, the McVay, where you're a system guy, right? That's your special power is going to be bringing the system, and that is what's going to have lead to you having success. I think he's actually been pretty bad at that. So the thing that I think he was supposed to be, I don't think he's good at all, but I think he might actually be developing into one of these, you know, culture CEO type head coaches where that's been successful right now. But now you're in that world of, but where's the credit? Is it actually him, or is it simply, you know, showing up to a Cincinnati bar with a game ball and making everybody feel great is a great thing?
It went to Zips, my favorite burger joint. Went to Zips.
But is it like that looks great when Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are out here carving everybody up? And, you know, you, like, it is difficult to know how much of that is him and how much of it is Burrow being, you know, the next great young quarterback. So, but my opinion on him is changing. Like, I thought initially he was simply not a particularly good head coach because I don't think he's schematically where he was supposed to be coming across from the Sean McVay system. But I'm starting to buy into the idea that he is sort of setting this culture that is having success in Cincinnati.
The difference between, I think, a Zach Taylor and, say, a Sean McDermott is we didn't see Zach Taylor have the success until he had Joe Burrow for a full season, right. Whereas we saw Sean McDermott win games, go to the playoffs with Josh Allen before he developed into a superstar. We saw him do it with Tyrod Taylor. We saw Sean McDermott, who's a defensive-minded coach, have the Bills' defense really good, pretty much year in, year out, outside of a season or two blip. That's where I think if Zach Taylor makes the AFC Championship for the next 4 years or next 3 years, like for 4 years in a row, does he ever get the credit because of how it started, right? He didn't have the success until Burrow took that
And you
that
can
step.
Also, like, Josh Allen was bad for a couple of years before he became good. We don't know, again, where does the credit belong to that, but you can at least give a portion of it to Sean McDermott, whereas Joe Burrow was good out of the gate, and what, if anything, propelled him into great the next year was giving him his college receiver back, right? So, like, it looks from the outside like there was very little Zach Taylor in the Joe Burrow development, you know what I mean? Like, he simply got the best quarterback to come along for a few years in terms of prospect, and then he paired him with the best wide receiver to come along for a few years. Like, connected those two, and wow, this is amazing! As opposed to, we have a bad quarterback who needs to take some development, get better, and consistently build around him. So it's a different credit apportion, I think.
There's one more name to talk about, but we're talking a lot about sustained success and alliteration. Hmm. And if you haven't heard already, it's Smooth Sack Summer, Sam.
Yeah, I've heard.
When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you've scaped your pubes to bum. Is what they tell me. Mm-hmm. That's right. This is the summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming are making sure we all have a ball this summer by giving our pants partners everything they need to stay fresh. Dive headfirst into Smooth Sack Summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our code PFF. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. They've built the ultimate grooming bundle for your summer grooming. Their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe trademark technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock, and gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. It's also waterproof. Beach, lake, or shower, the razor's going to devour even the strongest pubes. Couple free gifts in the Performance Package 4.0. You get the Manscaped boxers and the Shed travel bag. Sam's got something to show you as well over here once we get the screen back. But you get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF over at manscaped.com. Smooth Sack Summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind.
I mean, the reads are really poetry at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
Dive headfirst into Smooth Sack Summer.
As I'm reading this, I'm thinking, how many layers did they want to add to this?
Yeah. So I have, in the last week and a half or whatever, stayed away from trimming, keeping the beard in any way, you know, kempt. It is unkempt, therefore there must be kempt, right? Anyway, because there was a beard trimmer waiting for me here. So the Manscaped hedge your beard, the beard trimmer, whatever the hell this thing is, beard hedger?
It's a hedger.
The beard hedger is what it's called. As well as a whole bunch of other stuff in here. It's pretty awesome. There's the standard comb and brush. But there's also, so there's beard oil, beard shampoo, beard conditioner, and beard balm. Mm. These are four things to put on your beard. I was unaware that you're supposed to put all these things in your beard.
I assume that's all 20% off as well.
I've been rolling kind of with one. Like, I clean it. The end.
No.
But apparently there's a whole bunch of other stuff you're supposed to put in.
It's a whole package for the beard. So go check that out as well.
So I'm excited to give this thing a whirl.
Manscapes.com. All right, one more name I want to throw out there. Initially, we were just going to rank head coaches, and I'm like, oh, no, we got to do offensive and defensive coordinators too. I guess we'll just fly through the coordinator aspect of it. But Dan Campbell.
Mm.
Should he be on the head coaching?
So let's
this year.
Let's go with Dan Campbell into offensive coordinators, because that's, I think, one of the biggest difficulties with offensive coordinator rankings is this world where we talked about everyone's leaning offense. So there's a whole bunch of teams in the NFL where their head coach effectively is their offensive coordinator. I think in San Francisco's case, it's literal, right? They don't have an offensive coordinator because it's Kyle Shanahan. Like, they don't even, you know, most head coaches at least name a dude, you know, like a paper offensive coordinator. Would they do the heavy lifting? And this is where you get like Andy Reid versus Eric Bieniemy, right? Who was driving that? Because Andy Reid, we know, has had this sustained success for years and been a great offensive mind. Does Eric Bieniemy actually do anything? And that's such a big question for him that he has had to take a lateral move to go Washington to basically prove, hey, I can do this without Andy Reid. It's me. Like, I'm doing stuff here. It's not just, I'm not just like a pretend offensive coordinator where Andy Reid pulls the strings. But in San Francisco's case, I believe he's literally, like, they don't even have the paper offensive coordinator. So for Dan Campbell, doing a great job. Looks like he's setting a great culture. All the coffees, you know, all the knee biting, all that kind of stuff. On the other hand, Ben Johnson, I think, was the best offense coordinator in the NFL last season. And the driving force in Detroit, I think, was their offense last year more than the defense. So the credit pie again. How much is Dan Campbell and the sort of caricature that he is and all that kind of stuff? And that looks great. Like, you buy into all that when there's success. And how much of it is actually the guy with the scheme that's cooking up great offense and making everything work?
Yeah, we haven't had an article ranking the top offensive coordinators, and I don't even know how you would do it.
So, when you look through the list of offensive coordinators, there are very few names, I think, that you would make a strong case for as being a high-end offensive coordinator. Either you've got guys like PFF Bobby, still dead to us, who is new in the job. We don't know, right? Bobby hasn't done anything yet. We don't know how good he is. You've got guys that have failed already and therefore probably aren't great offense coordinators. You've got guys that we talked about, like Eric Bieniemy, who has had success, but it's been under one of these offensive minded head coaches. And now he has to prove himself outside of that environment that he can be, you know, the same guy essentially. And that, I think, is also the case for, you know, people under those types of head coaches, like Mike Kafka.
Mike Kafka. So Brian Daboll was the guy that deserves, you know, gets some credit for turning Josh Allen's career around. He goes to the Giants. Daniel Jones has a career year. Everybody's like, Brian Daboll, nice job. Well, Mike Kafka is the offensive coordinator there. Kafka did work with Mahomes a little bit, but you don't want to overrate Mahomes' credit, just like we're probably not going to do that with Eric Bieniemy, who goes to Washington. How much was Eric Bieniemy? Well, we give all the credit to Andy Reid being there for Patrick Mahomes.
Right. So,
and now Matt Nagy's the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs. Are we going to be calling him a genius in a year because they're going to have the best offense? Or
and he's already run through that. Mahomes, I mean, he got a head coaching gig off the back of his previous stint as offensive coordinator. You've also got Nathaniel Hackett. Like, he was at the helm of Aaron Rodgers' offense under LaFleur. Frank Smith, the offense coordinator in Miami, but Mike McDaniel is the head coach there. Like, there's a sequence of these guys where it's like, are they actually the ones doing this, or are they simply the paper offensive coordinator for an offensive genius of a head coach? Difficult to give those guys credit. So I think offensive coordinators that you do clearly give a lot of credit to, Ben Johnson, as we talked about in Detroit. I think Bill O'Brien in New England, because Bill O'Brien, the coach, was never the problem and has been consistently good everywhere he's been, which has been the NFL and college. He deserves a lot of credit.
Because you've seen success with him post-Brady.
Yes. The other name I think that's an obvious one is Kellen Moore, who I think is clearly a higher-end offensive mind and offensive coordinator, independent of the people that have been in place above him in the coaching order. So those three guys I think are the clear top three offensive coordinators in the NFL. But after that, I think you very quickly run out of names that you would push as, you know, these are obvious guys to talk about.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Who's the last name you just said? Sorry. Oh, Kellen Moore. Yeah, we'll learn more. We'll learn a lot about Kellen Moore. It's just fascinating, right? Because he's replacing Joe Lombardi, who now takes over for Denver. Because he's got a good rapport with Sean Payton. But again, if Russell Wilson turns his career around next year, we're going to... Good job, Sean Payton.
Right.
Nobody's going to be like, man, they brought in Joe Lombardi, who, you know, sucked the life out of Justin Herbert and the offense and the Chargers, never threw the ball down the field, and now Lombardi turned Russell Wilson around. I mean, yeah, there's very few offensive coordinators that are going to get credit. And then you have names like Matt Canada, who we always reference. It's like, yeah, I don't think there's been a year where he's elevated his offense, because that's all you're looking for is consistent elevation of the offense, and there's just not a lot of names that...
But the one name
that did that,
the Eric Bieniemy, I think, immediately puts himself in that conversation of best offense coordinators if he's able to do in any way, shape, or form replicate Kansas City's offense in Washington. And by that, like, obviously they're not going to have the best offense in the NFL and be carving everybody up. But if he's able to turn Sam Howell into anything,
we'll have a Lions-like season. Why are we sitting here raving about Ben Johnson? Because Jared Goff's a mid-tier quarterback,
right?
And you had one of the best offenses. It's almost like an opportunity-driven thing. I think Todd Monken's got a great opportunity, you know, if they get Lamar and the Ravens over the hump offensively, and as far as wins and losses go. I mean, it's almost an opportunity-driven thing. If Bobby goes out there and C.J. Stroud looks like a baller as a rookie, I mean, it's an opportunity-driven thing for a lot of these guys to kind of make a name for themselves.
It's simply, the chance to show, like, Washington ranked 23rd in offensive EPA per play last season, below Chicago, below, you know, a Tampa Bay team failing in offense, below the Browns, and obviously below league average. If he's able to jump to the other side of that, if he's able to produce an above average offense with Sam Howell at quarterback, with the thing looking reasonably good, then I think you immediately go, oh, Eric Bieniemy was the guy, you know, doing a lot of the work for Patrick Mahomes and his development. Like, the narrative around him completely changes because he does it outside of the environment of Mahomes and Andy Reid. So if he has a season, one, good next year, you immediately catapult him to the top of rankings like this.
All right, how about defensive coordinators? Trevor did put a list together over at PFF.com. I'll just read through it quickly and we'll react.
Okay.
The Belichick's number one. Bill Belichick, probably the defensive coordinator, but Steve Belichick and Gerard Mayo have been doing a lot there over the last couple of years, maybe even calling the plays. You know, Bill's always not really clear about roles.
Mm.
But you put the Belichick's, and he should add Gerard Mayo there, I'd say. At number one, Lou Anarumo from Cincinnati Bengals. I think another a guy that has distinctly stood out. Vic Fangio from the Dolphins. Dan Quinn at four for the Cowboys. Spags. For the Chiefs, Steve Spagnuolo, number five. Don Wink Martindale for the Giants, number six. Raheem Morris from the Rams, number seven. Number eight, Brian Flores from the Vikings. Ajiro Averro from the Carolina Panthers at nine. Steve Wilks, number 10 for the San Francisco 49ers. I think similar to offensive coordinator, how do you really distinguish this unless you've seen a guy do it in multiple situations with different types of personnel? I think that's the biggest thing. The other thing, like Anarumo being number two, game plan oriented type of guy that you've seen adjust. And I think Dan Quinn deserving credit for a guy that used to just run that straight up old school cover three, and he's adjusted to personnel. To me, that's where you get extra points and you see these Raheem Morris too. When you see guys change their scheme and have success in multiple ways, I think that's a huge part of being a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's like what we said with Shanahan on offense. The real cheat code is being able to evolve and do it again and keep staying ahead of the curve. And I think we've reached a stage in the NFL now where, because defense is so on the back foot and reactive and at the behest of offense and how all that, the whole dynamic of the game works now, I think we've kind of run the course until it swings back in the other direction of simply being able to show up with a system that is dominant on defense. Like, I don't know that you can do that anymore. You can't just roll in here and, you know, invent Tampa 2 and now you're just the best team in the league for a period of time because you're running a system that's so far ahead of anybody else in terms of overall success. I think we've run out of that. So the great coaches are the ones that are able to game plan and change and adjust and, you know, do things on a week-to-week basis to neutralize specific offensive threats or, you know, change up what's happening. And that, I think, like, is propelling some of these guys. The other sort of dynamic at work here is a bit like offense, though, to a lesser extent. Like, the best of these guys get picked off to be head coaches, right? So DeMeco Ryans gets a head coaching gig. Like, he's no longer the best defensive coordinator in the NFL, if he ever was, because he's been promoted and he's a head coach. So by definition, this list starts to skew towards guys that have either had their head coaching shot and failed and gone back to being coordinators, or guys that simply are not being given a head coaching job and have been like longer term coordinators for whatever reason. And so you're starting to see like a bigger body of evidence for these guys simply because they're not the ones that get picked off. So Vic Fangio, Dan Quinn, Spags, Wink Martindale, like, these are long time coordinators where you get to see a lot more of a body of evidence.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's no real list here. You know, Jonathan Gannon just gets head coaching. Like, there's no real list as you look at the defensive coordinators across the league of, like, yeah, this guy's had even 5 years of success. So it's not easy ranking, and I don't know. Like, we get a lot of questions like, who would you hire as an offensive or defensive head coach? And as much as we're supposed to be experts here, Sam, I don't know who I'd hire as coordinators because I don't have all the information at my fingertips, because it is about how they're going to interact with human beings and actually coach, not so much stuff that's on paper. Because there's, if I just say, show me Jack Del Rio or whoever's, Aaron Glenn's rankings as a defensive head coach, there's so many other variables there, including who you play offensively in a given year, as we always mention. You know, if you face all good quarterbacks one year,
right,
like Washington, where they went from facing the worst slate of quarterbacks and then they went to facing the best slate of quarterbacks the next year, and their defensive rankings changed accordingly, which is why, sort of full circle here, if you do have a Belichick who for the most part has a competitive defense, right, they've had some bad years but for the most part it's good competitive defense, right, then you deserve credit for being as consistent as possible. Sean McDermott, his defense, even though it's not him as coordinator necessarily, having that level of consistency is tough to find. So you have to give that credit in these rankings.
Yeah, so Belichick is difficult because, so, like, even just the way it's presented here in Trevor's article, like, Bill Belichick / Steve Belichick.
And Gerard Mayo should be in there.
Sure. But the point being, again, we have no idea who's actually driving this, except to say that it's probably Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're putting him there as the best offensive coordinator or defense coordinator in a way we weren't with Kyle Shanahan, with offensive coordinator. Like, if the 49ers literally don't have an offensive coordinator, then Shanahan is the best offensive coordinator in the NFL. He just happens to have a head coaching title above his name.
Has more on his plate.
So
as well.
if we're giving the credit for that, then Bill Belichick has to be the best defensive coordinator in the NFL if we assume he's the one pulling the strings. If we don't assume he's the one pulling the strings, that probably changes in his entire coaching legacy, and we start saying, actually, like, his son's a genius and not just a guy with a weird haircut and facial tics. I'm inclined to say I assume most of the success in New England is down to Bill Belichick, not Steve.
Probably.
And therefore, Steve belongs nowhere on a list of top defensive coordinators in the NFL.
So anyway, go check out Trevor's list over at PFF.com. He's got head coaches. He has defensive coordinators. We've disagreed with some of the head coaches. Defensive coordinator is just an overall challenge.
I would
need to see multiple years of success.
I think Vic Fangio deserves to be the top guy on the list.
Really?
Yeah. Like, he's running the defense right now that is the system everybody is trying to pivot towards, and he's been running it as well as anybody. And now, like, I think the opinion of him is a little bit tainted by the failure, quote unquote, in Denver as a head coach, but as a defensive coordinator, he's as good as it gets. So I would go Fangio 1, probably Anarumo 2, and then work from there.
Did Fangio, I mean, we're going to wrap this show up. Did Fangio just run into his scheme happens to be the answer for a lot of the single high beaters that the Shanahan system has come up with? Because that's what the Shanahan system does. They get an eighth guy in the box, you got to play single high, and then you beat it with concepts. And it's Shanahan, and it's McVay, and it's now Mike McDaniel, and all Fangio did was like, I like to play more quarters. I can play the run with seven in the box. And so I'm not, you know, as susceptible to some of these concepts that you guys have come up with. Did his scheme just run into the trend of the NFL, or is Vic Fangio really this mastermind?
I mean, maybe, but
we don't have to answer it right now.
Does he deserve credit for that if that's the case?
Yeah.
Like, are you a product of your results, or are you a product of what you're actually doing? Like, is it more impressive to identify a problem and come up with the solution to that problem, or to simply have been running the solution to that problem all the time and suddenly it becomes the thing that everybody is, like, it works? Did the league just, if Fangio has been running the same thing since like 1995, which I don't think he has been, but if that was the case, if he just been running his system since 95 and the league has gone from, like, you know, run heavy offenses out of I formation and fullback heavy systems to what is running now, like 11 personnel, three wide receivers, spreading everything out, and it's taken Fangio's defense from, like, fine to suddenly the best defense in the NFL because offenses have pivoted in that direction. Does he deserve any credit for that whatsoever, or has he simply been lucky?
No, he deserves credit. By the 1995 was Vic Fangio's first year as an NFL defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You knew that?
Yeah.
Panthers.
Only because I'm looking at Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah, you're the Panthers. I thought that you were just pulling a number out. But yeah, he had success early last decade with the 49ers as defensive coordinator. We know he turned the Bears in 2014, had one of the worst defenses I can ever remember.
Right.
And by 2018, Fangio's last year there, they were the best in the league. He gets the head coaching job with the Broncos. They did have a good defense there. I love how they have the fact that he was a consultant with the Eagles last year. Was that just for Super Bowl week, or was that wasn't more than that, was it?
It was more, yeah. I think it was more, but not by much. Like, it was definitely a focused period at the end.
And now, look, Fangio deserves to be at least top three on the list because his presence in Miami, along with Jalen Ramsey, but his presence in Miami, who we already know was excellent offensively, is one of the biggest stories this year.
Yeah.
Because that could turn the AFC a certain way if Fangio, you know, puts his fingerprints on that defense immediately. So, All right, man. I think that's it for today.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Brad and Trevor filling in for the rest of the week with you.
In some capacity.
And we've got the rugby video
coming
up. When are we going to play that? When I'm back on the show?
You have to take a look at it first. Maybe Tyler did a terrible job. Maybe it's not fit for public consumption yet. Who knows?
What if it makes me look bad?
I mean,
that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
So we'll have the rugby video soon, probably when I get back here. But
you go find some footage of, like, competent players and then somehow CGI our faces onto them, make us look better.
Yes.
Collectively.
Younger.
Younger, fitter, less fat. A lot of things.
All right. Well, as always, we appreciate the lively chat. A lot of chatter going on. Hit that thumbs up on the way out. And, hey, it's training camp this month. We're going to try to do some stuff.
It's July already.
Maybe travel a little bit. Happy 4th of July, everybody. America's birthday, and if you're celebrating. And, I'll be back soon, and you'll be back here on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you soon.